army reached Basra, they attacked my officials, some of whom were taken prisoners, while others were killed mercilessly. And then they looted Baitul Mal, public treasure. The details of the brutal slaughter that was carried out by them are horrid. Some of the Muslims were tortured to death in prison, and some were outright butchered. By Allah, if they had killed one innocent person without any genuine cause, I would have been justified in ordering capital punishment to every one of them, because they all had joined hands in the crime and had knowingly committed the sin. The situation is that they have mercilessly slaughtered as many defenseless and innocent people as they had soldiers in their army. Sermon 178. In this sermon, Imam Ali has availed as a stopple against his opponents an argument which was once used by them against him. To understand this, it is essential to know a few facts of history. Immediately after the passing away of the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, certain Muslims, leaving the body of the Holy Prophet of Allah unburied, hurried to the Saqifa Bani Sa'idah to decide the question of caliphate. Imam Ali did not join this group. His contention was that the burial of the Prophet of Islam had priority over every other action. Rest of the Bani Hashim also abstained from taking part in that activity. Thus the case of the caliphate was settled amongst the few who had gathered at the Saqifa. They called it an election. When Imam Ali refused to accept the so-called elected caliph, the argument referred to above was brought forward to prove that Imam Ali was not right in refusing. This argument was in three parts. The first part said that the caliphate of the Holy Prophet should be decided by general election. The second part was that those who were present at the time of decision could not later go back upon it. The third part was that those who were absent should accept the decision of those who were present at the election. People from whom Muawiyah was later receiving support were those who had clamored the loudest about the argument. But when the rulership of the Muslim state in the form of caliphate came to Imam Ali, they rebelled against it. Many of them were rebelling even after having sworn the oath of allegiance to him, and some saying that they were not present when people gathered round him and requested him to accept the caliphate. Imam Ali cited the above argument merely as a stopple against them, simply to prove how fictitious and flimsy were points raised by his enemies to deprive him of his just rights, and how they would go back upon their accepted principles to harm him. He, in fact, never on point of religion accepted either the election or the principles said to be involved in it. Imam Ali's contention was that the caliph of the Holy Prophet should be a person who rightly deserved the place, that he should be nominated by the Holy Prophet under orders of Allah, that the control of religion cannot be left at the mercy of ignorant masses, that the Holy Prophet had already given out the names of the 12 caliph or imams that would succeed him, one after the other, and that they would be 12 in all. Muhammad, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, is the Holy Prophet whom Allah has entrusted his revelations. He is the last of all the prophets. He brings glad tidings of the mercy of Allah and warns human beings of the consequences of the wrath of Allah. O people, from amongst you, only he who possesses moral strength to maintain peace and to carry on a government based on equity and justice, and who has best understood the commandments of Allah for this purpose, deserves to be the caliph. If somebody revolts against such a rule, he should in the beginning be dissuaded from his evil intentions and advised to repent what he has done. And if he does not abstain from his activities, then there is no alternative left but to use force against him. By Allah, if the question of caliphate cannot be settled, as they say, unless all the people have gathered together and have decided unanimously, then there is no practical possibility of such a thing. To overcome this impossibility, they decided that those in power and those who can control the situation may come to a conclusion and may decide in anyone's favor. It was then made incumbent upon those who were present to abide by the decision, even if they disagreed with it, and absentees had no right to elect anybody else. They would also have to yield and submit to the decision. When once a person has not only accepted a principle, but has also forced others to bow before it, how can he now go back upon it? Does it not prove that in the beginning he propagated certain pseudo-principles, and when they worked against him, he went back upon them? Know that I shall certainly fight against two kinds of persons. Firstly, those who claim caliphate, though they do not deserve it. Secondly, those who do not fulfill the obligations laid down upon them by Allah, that is, to faithfully adhere to the oath of allegiance sworn. O creatures of Allah, I advise you to fear Allah because of all the exhortations that were ever given to mankind. This is the best. Great are its effects and consequences which one could aspire to achieve in the realm of Allah. Unfortunately, a civil war has started between you and other Muslims. No one should lead you in this war but the person who has wisdom, who can bear sufferings patiently, who knows where truth and justice lay and can guide you to them. Now do what you have been told to do and abstain from what you have been forbidden. Do not make haste, but fully consider every action before you decide to do it. Regarding those affairs of administrations which are disagreeable to you, I am willing to accept reasonable and justifiable modifications. Remember that this world which you covet so ardently and attempt to acquire so earnestly, and which sometimes annoys you and sometimes pleases you so much, is neither your home nor a permanent destination. You have not been created for it, nor invited to it as your resting place. It shall neither remain with you forever, nor will you remain in it eternally. If it has enticed you away with its charms, it has also warned and cautioned you of real dangers lurking in its folds. Take account of the warnings it has given you, and do not be seduced or deceived by its allurements. Let these warnings frighten you from being too greedy to possess it. Try to advance towards the place where you are invited for eternal bliss, and turn your face away from the vicious world. Do not weep and fret like a slave girl over such worldly pleasures and profits that have been held back from you. In obedience to the commands of Allah,
bear your loss patiently, protecting those things which you are ordained to protect. Pray and beseech Allah for His bounties and blessings. Remember that if you follow your religion faithfully and observe its tenets carefully, then no worldly loss is going to harm you permanently. And if you have lost your faith in religion and Allah, then nothing that you have amassed and gathered from this world will be of any use to you. May the merciful Allah guide us to the path of truth and justice and help us bear our sufferings patiently.
Sermon 179. Talha was a relative and friend of Caliph Uthman, but during the caliphate of the latter, he quarreled with him. Marwan was one of the worst causes of this quarrel. After having fallen out with the third caliph, he tried most wickedly to rouse the masses against him. He was a propagandist of sorts and used his evil talents to deteriorate the situation as much as possible. When the masses stormed the place of Uthman, he actually backed them. All the time he was expecting that after the third caliph, the caliphate would go to him. But when quite against his expectations, people swore the oath of allegiance to Imam Ali, he felt frustrated. In this mood, he found a companion in Zubair. They both intrigued against Imam Ali. Their slogan was, "Avenge the murder of the third caliph." In this sermon, Imam Ali has explained how baseless was the stand of Talha and how worthless was his challenge to Imam Ali to come out for a fight. Imam Ali had actually led a life of warrior from the age of 14 and was the only man who won the battles of Badr, Uhud, Khaybar, Khandaq, Hunain, and several other minor battles. During these battles, he had killed many famous marshals and warriors of the Arabian Peninsula, like Marhab, Antar, Abdaud, Harith, Nawfal bin Khalid, Umar, the uncle of this very Talha, and Talha bin Talha. It was really ridiculous to think of frightening such a person with war. Imam Ali explained the reason why Talha was so loud in demanding vengeance of the murder of the third caliph. "I cannot be frightened with war, nor have I ever felt nervous to face any enemy. I always have full confidence and faith in the help which was promised to me by Allah, and it never failed me. By Allah, Talha is standing like a warrior to demand blood of Uthman's murderers, simply because he is afraid that he himself will be rightly accused of his murder. As it is, most of the people consider him to be one of the murderers of Uthman. And it is a fact that amongst the enemies of Uthman who were demanding his blood, no one was the worst enemy, more intent upon the murder, than Talha himself. Now he has adopted this tactic of coming out as an avenger of the blood of Uthman, simply to create doubt in the minds of people and shift the point of suspicion from himself towards somebody else. This raising of the armed forces and this loud clamoring of vengeance are for no other purpose except the one stated above. By the Lord, if Talha was a sincere and honest person, he ought to have adopted any of these three courses. If Ibn Affan, Caliph Uthman, was tyrant as Talha had believed him to be, Talha ought to have helped his enemies, as he actually did,
but afterwards ought not to have formed a party of his so-called friends, as he is doing now. And if Uthman was really a good man and was being oppressed by his enemies, and if Talha was his friend, then Talha ought to have gone to his help during the lifetime of Uthman and during the days when his enemies had gathered around him with drawn swords. But he did not do this. And if he had his doubts about the goodness of Uthman, and if he was an honest Muslim, he ought to have retired from the field during the life and after the death of Uthman, and left the situation in the hands of those who knew the law of the land. But he did not do this either. In fact, he did not adopt any of the three courses open to a faithful Muslim and an honest citizen of the country. But contrary to all canons of justice and equity, he has now come forward with a claim which can neither be justified nor upheld. Sermon 180. Imam Ali, like Jesus Christ, informs that world that he knows, the past and future of the world, not only of the world but also a very individual human being. And the fact is that, like Christ and our holy prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, he never used this knowledge to profit by it. O people, you are so indifferent to your obligations and so unmindful of your duties. Remember that you will not be excused for such carelessness and negligence. Or you want to go out of the folds of religion. Remember that you shall not be left unquestioned and unpunished. How is it that I find you drifting away and away from Allah and swaying towards unholy thoughts and deeds? You are behaving as if you are cattle whom the shepherd is driving towards a pasture or a watering place where deadly cattle diseases are raging and they cannot resist this drive. Or you are like the sheep who are being fattened on fresh grounds and good grass to be butchered, and they do not realize that they are being so well treated that when killed they would give soft and fat meat. Their vision is so limited that they consider the day they are passing to be the whole span of their lives, and the sole purpose of their existence is to eat and drink. By Allah, if I like, I can tell every one of you how he started life and how he is going to end it, from where he has come and where he will go, and how he is passing his days. But I do not do this lest they should wrongly consider me superior to the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants. But I shall tell this to those of my faithful followers about whom I never would think of apostasy. I swear by him who has appointed the Holy Prophet as his trusted messenger to carry the noblest truth to man, and selected him of all his creatures for this world, that I am speaking the truth. The Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, has bequeathed all this to me. I know who will be damned and who will get salvation. I know the fate of this caliphate and of what will happen to me. O people, I swear by Allah that I do not persuade you to obey any order of Allah unless I have myself first obeyed it faithfully. And I do not prevent you from any vice or sin unless I have first abstained from it myself. Sermon 181. In this sermon, Imam Ali has advised the people to take full advantage of what Allah has revealed to them through the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants. He has explained in detail what the Holy Prophet has preached and what the Holy Quran can teach them and can achieve for them in this world and the hereafter. He tells them to take an account of their intentions and deeds, to take lessons from the lives of people who are dead, and from things happening around them, and to control their thoughts. He further advises them as to the way of life they should adopt. That is, their beings, their tongues should be free from scandal, and they should not exploit others to amass wealth. He informs them that hypocrisy and innovation in religion are the two worst enemies. And there are three kinds of offenses which one has to account for. Offense against Allah, against man, and against himself. He ends the sermon by revealing qualities of those whom he calls blessed. Try to be benefited by what the merciful Allah has taught you in the language of religion. Take counsel of the pieces of advice bestowed by him and have sincere faith in them. He has explained the effects of vices and virtues with the help of such clear arguments that no room is left for you to doubt them and to advance excuses to go against them. He has most expressively and emphatically refuted every argument against piety, virtuousness, and holiness, and has told you what he likes and what he does not like, so that you may do good and abstain from evil. The Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, has said, "The paradise lies in the midst of duties and obligations which human beings usually find disagreeable, displeasing, hard, harsh, and painful. But to reach there, one has to pass through all these. And contrarily, hell is found among such activities as are apparently attractive, alluring, pleasing, comforting, and gratifying. Remember that every order of Allah appears to be painstaking, displeasing and harsh, and every sin allures you in the form of your ardent desire, extremely attractive and highly gratifying to mind and body. May Allah bless the man who dispels from his mind base desires and avarices, because human mind has the weakness of developing ardent desires, and it is this urge which drives one towards vices and sins. O creatures of Allah, you must be aware that every morn and night a faithful Muslim looks at his intentions and deeds with doubts and suspicions of adopting vice and grab of virtue. He blames himself for his shortcomings and forces himself to strive more and more to think and do good. Try to follow those good people who have passed away before you. They left this world like the one who is proceeding on a long journey. They passed through this life as if it was a stage on their route, where their halt was to be of a very short duration. Remember that the Holy Quran is such a gospel that it will never deceive you. It is such a guide that it will never mislead you. And it is such a interpreter that it will never puzzle or beguile you. Whoever comes in contact with it and has sincerity of purpose in achieving this contact, the Holy Book will not leave him without enhancing his virtues and diminishing his vices. All of you should know that if somebody has studied the Holy Quran carefully, he does not require any other gospel to guide him. And without knowing the Holy Quran, no other knowledge is complete or useful. If you have lost a healthy balance of mind through attachment to vices and sins, then seek treatment and guidance of this Holy Book. It will cure your mind of the diseases of schism, doubt, paganism, and cruelty. Seek its help. It will teach you to face misfortunes and calamities. Invoke the help of Allah through it. Go towards Him with its love in your heart. But remember, do not make it an instrument of beggary in society. Because this gospel teaches you how to seek help of Allah and not to beg of your fellow beings. Remember that on the day of judgment, this holy book will intercede. A man who knows it well will have the right and chance of pleading his cause on that basis. And its intercession will be accepted. It will be like a speaker whose every word is true and is accepted. On that day, those persons whose intentions and deeds are proved virtuous and good, according to its tenets, will receive salvation. And those whose vices are condemned through it will be damned. It will be declared that those who have founded their faiths and beliefs on the teachings of this holy book will have their souls saved, and faiths of others shall be doomed. So be guided by the Holy Quran. Take guidance from it and make it your leader to take you to the domain of Allah. O people, take its advice. Do not give preference to your opinion against its principle. Believe me, your views are quite misleading in relation to its tenets. Do good. Have faith in life after death. Have patience on calamities and sufferings. Be pious. Be virtuous. For every one of you, Islam has fixed an ideal. Strive to achieve it. For all of you, there is a set path. Try to be guided by it. Islam has its aim for each of you to aspire for and to attain. Allah has imposed certain duties and obligations on you. Discharge those duties and comply with those commands. On the day of judgment, I shall bear witness to your activities. Look what is destined to be, and what has come to pass, and how the decision of Allah has taken effect. Verily, I speak to you in accordance with the promise of Allah and the Holy Quran. Allah has declared in the Holy Quran, to those who have said, Allah is our Lord, and who have remained steadfast to their belief, the angels will descend saying, do not be afraid or grieved. Receive the glad tidings of the paradise which was promised to you. Surah Ha-Meen 41:30. If you declare that your Lord is Allah, then it is your duty to obey the tenets laid down in the Holy Quran, to follow the teachings of the religion, and to carry on divine worship according to the best ways taught by Islam. Do not go astray. Do not introduce innovation and schism in Islam. Do not try to go out of its fold. Because on the day of judgment, deserters shall have no share in the mercy of Allah. It is obligatory upon you that you do not play the part of a hypocrite in religion and do not degrade your character. Always speak the truth. It is necessary for a man to have complete control over his tongue, because it often betrays him and carries him to death and damnation. I swear by Allah that I never saw anybody being benefited by virtues and piety unless he had complete control over his tongue.